start the show in a, it's kind of a bit of a sad note, but I have to mention this, and I feel he deserves a front of the show chat. And that is Ivan Reitman is no longer, yeah. Ivan Reitman is no longer with us. 75 years old. And this week we lost a great director. I was looking up, you know, he only did 25 films. He hasn't done a whole lot. His last film was Draft Day, 2016 or 17, I believe, with Kevin Costner. And, I actually kind of enjoyed that.
I kind of enjoyed that movie.
I didn't realize it was Ivan Reitman. But of course the great director of Ghostbusters and Stripes, has left this world. And it's strange. The day I found out, I was watching the Movies That Made Us Ghostbusters episode, and Ivan Reitman, of course, is in it. Featured in the episode since he made the film. And I saw the news come out online, as many people did. And I was like, wow, that's sad. You know, I'm grateful, though, that he got to see Ghostbusters Afterlife that his son made as a tribute to him before he left us, because it's a nice tribute. But that said, this is Mark.
Yeah.
This is the Rebel Radio Podcast, and we're not through talking about Ivan Reitman, but I just wanted to get the introduction out. But, you know, he gave us some gifts, definitely a talented filmmaker, made some memorable films that will be remembered forever, especially Ghostbusters and Stripes, a couple of my favorites.
Did you know he was originally attached to Batman when they were trying to make it in the 80s?
I didn't know that. And
he wanted to cast Bill Murray as the Dark Knight.
I don't see that. I don't.
And he wanted Michael J. Fox as Robin.
I don't
Robin.
Not see Ivan Reitman being able to direct a Batman film. I just don't see that casting. So I'm kind of glad that didn't turn out.
Yeah.
Isn't
that crazy? I don't see Bill Murray either as.
No. Yeah. Well, my biggest thing when I heard about this week was just like, you know, what gifts he gave us, and just the fact that he got to see his son Jason direct a legacy sequel to his probably his biggest film of his career, and I think that's pretty special that he got to see it and see his son do that, and that's pretty cool.
No, he definitely, man, he started one heck of a franchise. It's one of those franchises where, you know, you have people that still cosplay, you have people that do up their cars to try and make it look like, you know, a 55, that 55 Cadillac ambulance. But, you know, of course, hard to do it. There's one that showed up at Jerry's Autorama this past year, looked pretty good. But then, you know, there's all these groups that cosplay. Kind of like the 501st, but, you know, with Ghostbusters. And we see him at Comic Palooza every year.
I mean,
so it's a big deal, you know. He started.
My 7-year-old absolutely loves Ghostbusters. You know, he just loves it. In fact, today when I was in a store, he had been wanting the Phoebe figure, and he found it. So he got Phoebe to go with his Ghostbuster collection from the new movie. And and that just shows you the appeal that Ghostbusters has had, and which is Ivan Reitman's impact on the film world, that it's reached out, you know, almost 40 years later, it's still popular. Kids are still discovering it, enjoying it. And I said this a couple weeks ago when Long had finally, and Long is taking another week off as his dad is doing well, but he's still helping out the family with some stuff, and he'll be back with us next week. So best of luck, Long. Yeah. We'll see you next week on the show. But when Long was talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife a couple weeks ago and seeing it, I lost my train of thought there, but that's the great thing that it's cross generations, and it was a nice tribute to Egon or Harold Ramis and what Ivan Reitman's legacy was for bringing this franchise to the world, you know, almost 40 years later.
Yeah, I think you had everything, you know, a lot of not everything, but made, you know, a lot of elements that made the first one great. The comedy, the wonder and fascination of it all, and then of course Zool and Evo Shandor stuff.
Yeah, Evo Shandor, which is never actually seen in any of the films, but he's the greatest Ghostbusters villain.
Yeah,
maybe if they make another one.
Well, this one in Afterlife.
Yeah,
for that.
Oh,
you know, he got split.
Yeah,
in
that's true. You know. It did finally. I forgot about that. But, you know, that franchise is quite a legacy. Made some great comedy films, too, over the years. Like I said, Stripes is an hilarious movie with the late, great John Candy in that. And, I was looking up here.
Bill Murray.
Yeah. He was a producer on Heavy Metal, which is the first animated film I ever saw boobies in. I didn't realize he made No Strings Attached with Natalie Portman from a few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. He made a couple of your favorite actor, Arnold. He did Junior and he did Twins and Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know he did Twins.
Kindergarten Cop. So he did all three of Arnold's comedies were done by Ivan Reitman. Meatballs, of course. Another movie, it was the first time a lot of kids saw titties. You know? Mm-hmm. So Ivan Reitman has given us Ghostbusters and kids' first movies. I guess that's
awesome.
It's true. I mean, but rest in peace to the great Ivan Reitman. You will be missed, but your films will live with us forever. And that's an awesome legacy.
Yeah.
So how are you, Matt?
His daughter looks just
like him. Oh, yeah. Well, so does Jason. Really, they both do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think his daughter looks even more so.
I'll have to look her up.
Catherine? Yeah. Yeah, dude, you got to look her up. You'll be like, holy crap, it's a female version of my Ivan Reitman. But it's been a good week. My sister graduated police academy on Friday as the best overall cadet.
That means she kissed a lot of
butts. I was about to say. I was like, she must be the favorite. They call. You know, she kind of disappointed me, though. I had to knock on her because apparently her nickname was going to be Ewok, and she didn't know what an Ewok was. Oh,
disown her. Be done with her.
Yep.
No.
I told her, I was like, hey, between me and your Uncle Ted, you didn't know what an Ewok was. And she's like, I'm sorry, Bubba. So they had to go with Hobbit.
There's only one trilogy, and it's of the Jedi. Oh,
yes.
You know, next time I see her, you know she's getting shit from me. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Hopefully you give her some, you know, because she deserves it for that. But congrats to her. I'll mention it and download this. But that's mainly what I did this week was her graduation was probably the biggest thing.
For me, it's baseball season started for the 7-year-old. So for Wyatt, been busy, a couple of practices. Oh, wow. We start games in a couple of weeks and he's upset because he only has one Saturday game and it's on his birthday, the 5th. And I said, well, Wyatt, it's okay. We'll still have your birthday. We'll go because he wants to try to go see Batman, play baseball and have his birthday all one day. And I said, no, we're going to go see Batman on Sunday. We can't do it all one day.
Yeah, that's a big order.
And Friday, they get out of school too late to do a Friday night showing, especially for a 3-hour film. So I was like, we can wait until Sunday. It's okay. So
yeah.
I haven't bought tickets yet because I was waiting to get his baseball schedule. But now that I have a schedule, I think I'll probably buy tickets this week for the Sunday showing. Nice. Of the Batman. But that's about it, man. Let's get into the show officially, though, after paying our respects to Ivan Reitman. Let's get into Download This, where we tell people we watched, stream, checked out this week. And I'll go first since you went first last week. And I did watch the Movies That Made Us episode of Ghostbusters, as I mentioned, and the Aliens episode. And the Ghostbusters episode, I kind of had known some of that stuff. But the Aliens episode, there was some – man, I didn't realize how much practical effects James Cameron truly used for that film. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, like from men in garbage bags as placeholders for the alien creatures, and they built a puppets for some of the aliens, and it's just amazing the amount of true filmmaking Cameron. It makes Aliens even more impressive to me now after watching that, because I guess I like Aliens episode, and I always have, but I've never like watched any special features like I do with Star Wars and things like that. I've never bothered doing any behind the scenes work, and it's just amazing how much Cameron and his crew put into that. And that movie. So it was cool to watch. So that was fun. Yeah, definitely check it out. It's from the producers of The Toys That Made Us. So it's good stuff. And I was trying to look up if there's – Netflix is still not set if there's going to be another season of The Toys That Made Us. But from what I'm reading, it's not looking likely, unfortunately, to get any more Toys That Made Us. Not out of the woods yet. It hasn't been canceled by Netflix either. But it's just looking, as time goes by, less likely of it getting done. So we'll see. But the big thing I watched this week, I finally sat down and watched Eternals. And I really don't get the hatred. I actually really enjoyed it. I found it kind of refreshing to be not the same as the other Marvel movies. There were some characters that I wasn't real familiar with. You know, I had heard of Icarus and Circe, a couple of them through reading comics, but I wasn't really familiar with who they were. And I think that's why I really liked it. It may be a little long, but it could have been shortened a little bit. But overall, I just found it kind of refreshing to watch. It starts out a little sluggish. Did you see it yet? Have you watched it?
I never got to finish it.
It starts out a little sluggish, yeah. But once it gets going, I really found it pretty damn entertaining with a cool story, and I can see how it's going to tie in. If you know anything about Galacticus and other comics, let's be honest. At this point, we know they're doing Galacticus. We know it. They're doing the Fantastic Four, or they're doing some sort of version of Secret Wars in some way that's going to involve possibly Galacticus and the Beyonder and Silver Surfer and Kang, whoever they're introducing. Because if you look at what they're setting up right now, you had one big bad for phase one, and that was Thanos, of course. They're setting up multiple big bads for phase two, if you look at with what they did with the Loki series and stuff. I mean, you're talking Kang, you're talking possibly Galacticus, possibly Doctor Doom. And now with the Doctor Strange trailer, which we're going to talk about later in the multiverse, they're setting up. There's only one way you can go bigger and badder for phase two than Thanos and the Infinity War, and that is multiple bigger and badder villains that's going to take a huge Marvel universe to defeat this. And I think Eternals, in that sense, is going to play an important part to that later on if you've read comics and understand things that are going on, especially the post-credit scene with Thanos' brother, Eros, played by Harry Styles. I mean, that's going to be huge as they look for other Eternals out there to help in the coming battles that are happening. But Matt, you should finish it, man. I really liked it. I don't know why. I'm sitting there watching it going, why do people shit on this movie? I thought it was really good. Yeah. You know, it's beautifully shot. It's
Jackie liked it too.
It's beautifully shot. Probably one of the best looking Marvel films of any of them cinematography wise. I also like the fact that like you have this huge star in this Marvel film, Angelina Jolie, who, you know, is obviously a leading woman, and she's pulled back a little bit in this. And she's still that star power, but yet she's reserved. And I think it works beautifully with the rest of the cast. You know, she just flows right into the Marvel universe. And I enjoyed the heck out of it, man. I didn't get the hatred. Now I didn't Disney Plus, cause it's a fucktard sometimes. I didn't hear the second post-credit scene. And I mean, I know you've already read it, Matt, so it's not really a spoiler where you hear the voice of Blade. It didn't work on Disney Plus for some reason. And that kind of pissed me off. I got the first post-credit scene with Harry Styles, but the second post-credit scene, you know, cut off because of the damn credits or whatever, trying to get you to watch something next. You know, I was like, you son of a bitch. So, but that's what I watched this week, man.
Man.
Eternals. Good stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I told you before the show, I watched this B-movie called The Terrifier. It's pretty gory. If you're a fan of that B movie horror stuff where there's just tons of corn syrup, then you probably like it. But if not, you know, then sit that one out. I watched Sleepy Hollow. It's funny. It's the second movie with the same actor that played Rico in Starship Troopers. He's in that one. He's the guy that decides he's going to fight the Headless Horseman. Oh, I forgot
Casper Van.
He's actually doing.
Van Dien is in that.
Yeah, Casper. Yeah, he gets like cut in half at the waist after fighting Christopher Walken, and yeah, it was a pretty gory scene. I like Johnny Depp's character in that movie, and of course the great Christopher Lee's in that movie, actor that played Albus Dumbledore's in that movie. And of course, the always beautiful Christina Ricci is in that film. She's cool in there as a witch, but they don't burn her at the stake for some reason. You know, because back then, you know, if a woman answered a math question, she's a witch. You know, but magic they're okay with. And I watched the first two RoboCops. I had a 4-day weekend, so I had a lot of time for movies. RoboCop 1 and 2. And you finished Peacemaker, and I really like how it ended. Mark, I sent you a spoiler clip.
I already saw the stuff online. I already know what happened.
Yeah, I figured you'd seen it. they actually bring in the Justice League. In fact, they wanted to bring in Batman and
Cyborg.
Who was the Cyborg? Yeah, but they just didn't make the cut. You know, I guess they just had a limited amount of time or something, but then they actually used the set, one of the sets from Guardians of the Galaxy 3, to help out James Gunn. And a lot of people were, you know, they're speculating that maybe they weren't doing it just to be nice. They were trying to get him finished with that so James Gunn can come back to Marvel or something. But it was fun. It's a fun series. It's already been greenlit for a season 2, which I may be jumping the gun. We may have had that in the news.
I didn't write it. I usually don't write series pickups as news.
Oh yeah.
And then isn't DC, from what I don't know if it was confirmed, but I think he's already kind of been hired by Warner Brothers to possibly at least script another Suicide Squad. I don't know if he's going to direct it since he's still finishing Guardians 3.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Because as cheesy as the opening is, I'm with our friend Brandon over at Cult 45. It's grown on me. They just did their review of the series. If you want to go check it out, you know, got a good thing going on over there. And they covered Peacemaker. Randy does not like the opening. He thinks it's bad cheese. Brandon says it's good cheese. It's grown on me. And he's so he does work as a main part, but he's got to be it's got to be more action. I think whenever he does too much comedy, it's too much. Like there's this episode where he's just naming off people that they could have blamed framed for his something he had to do earlier in the series, and they got his dad arrested. They accidentally tied his dad to the murder instead of someone else, and he's like Barney Rubble. You could have used Barney Rubble, and you could have used Snoop Dogg, or he's going through all these celebrities, and I'm like, it's getting kind of repetitive, but you know, he's done a good job and good enough to go on for another season, so we'll catch it next year. And lastly, I watched The Sound of Music. That's right. My wife put on The Sound of Music, and I was like, yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. And it was actually pretty good. I was entertained. And it's a good film. It doesn't waste any time.
Sworn having to watch that. That's, you know, that's what the audience really wants to know.
At least not yet. But she said, this is what I want to watch. I usually hog the TV, so... You know, I usually
like I said, get to pick I don't mind musicals, but I can never get into The Sound of Music.
I had started the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre because the kids were kind of outside. Well, you probably watched
a better movie. I don't like The Sound of Music, but I'm sure it's a better movie because that thing has gotten absolute shit on this week. Its reviews have hit.
Yeah. I have friends that are, you know, horror movie fans like me, and it's very mixed with them. Some people are like, well, I thought it was good. And some people are like, oh, it's horse shit. You know, it's just, there's nothing in the middle. It's just, it or it's dog shit.
I watched the trailer out of curiosity, and it's not even good acting in the trailer. It's like, they're not even, even in the trailer, I'm like, they're not even trying. At least a badly acted horror movie tries. Let me think of an example. Like the Hellraiser films. They're not well acted, but at least they're trying. I can watch a trailer for that Netflix Chainsaw, and I'm like, they're not even trying. So it's like,
yeah,
like, that's bad if you can tell that from the trailer. You know, it's like
they must have paid them in Snickers bars or something. That's why they didn't bring it.
I almost said Cabin in the Woods, but Cabin in the Woods is actually pretty well acted. I like that. You know, I'm not a big horror fan movie like you, obviously, but I do like Cabin in the Woods. I think that's a pretty fucking cool. I just like the idea of the film. I think it's so unique, you know.
Satirical horror.
I don't even know if it's good. It's more like sci-fi horror, Cabin in the Woods is. And I think that's why I like it. I kind of like horror when they blend it with science fiction and throw really unique ideas instead of just the slashers killing people. And I think that's why I think Cabin in the Woods is pretty cool. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I think that's why I like Army of Darkness too, better than the other two, because it blends fantasy and science fiction with horror. You know, it's not just a blood and guts movie. So I tend to lean more towards those.
And Bruce Campbell's so good in it. Apparently they were going that Freddy versus Jason was going to be Freddy versus Jason versus Ash.
That's a big rumor. That
Robert Englund
yes,
said that.
It's become an inside joke between all of them. Yes, in the last few years, because of the comics popularity and them crossing over the comics, it's kind of become what I've understood is a kind of an inside joke between the actors to play it up to audiences. But yeah, because people say you go back to like that era 99 or when 2000 when they're making, there's nothing ever mentioning at all. So it's something the actors, I think, have kind of played into over the years.
Okay, maybe so.
Yeah.
Just to get the fans all, yeah, you know, oh, what could have been, you know. But that was it for me this week.
That's a perfect segue then, I think, into today's
Oh, you can't. I did watch The Shootist. You can't
backtrack, man.
I did watch The Shootist with
That racist son of a bitch.
His last film.
Remember.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
That's how I won. Played the race card, motherfucker. And then I had an Asian voting on it.
Yeah.
See, the Asian's going to go for the race card thing, man. So.
Man, I thought I was going to go with the highest award. That was my argument. I was like, his award for his body of work's higher, so he'll pick mine. Anyway, nope, you had to play the racism card.
let's bring in today's feature film, which is kind of a fantasy horror science fiction. Actually, it's kind of a genre blend, this whole fucking movie. And it is 1999's remake of the Universal horror classic The Mummy. And make no mistake, this is a remake, because if you know anything about the original Mummy, it's pretty close in story.
Yep,
pretty close in story to what the original was. I mean, obviously this is a big budget Hollywood remake, so it's bigger and fancier and more expensive. One of the most expensive movies at the time back in 1999 when it was made.
Steven Sommers must have been really good at pitching budgets.
Yes, he got a lot of. He was a Hollywood boy for a while, where he got a lot of big budget films like this. And
before this, he had done The Jungle Book, right? And he had done Deepwater Rising, and he had a knack for making a B type movie into a blockbuster hit. And that must have been why they went from $50 million to $80 million in their budget, because before, Clive Barker and George A. Romero were tied to this, and it was only going to be $50 million. And then Sommers, I guess he just has a silver tongue or something. He was able to get $30 million more for his budget, and it looks good. I watched it in 4K, and I'll go ahead and summarize.
I'll go ahead.
So we have a little bit of historical fiction in here. We have Seti the First, who was in the, these are different eras. You have Imhotep. He really was the first physician. You have Naxun Amun, this little love triangle going on between them. Imhotep touched her, and then he had to kill Seti the First, the emperor, and they kill Naxun Amun, and he tries to resurrect her. While he's trying to resurrect her, the Magi come in. Seti's bodyguards and arrest him, and they perform the Hamundai, where they mummify you alive in the
you
casket.
Sound like you fucking practice this.
I've seen this movie like 20 times, and so he gets eaten up by these scarab beetles, and they make him slowly decompose this whole time. While in the French Foreign Legion, we have Brendan Fraser. He's with the French Foreign Legion, they stumble upon Hamunaptra, and they are under attack of the Magi. And he ends up getting rescued by Rachel Weisz's character and her brother, who found his box and map that he found over there in Hamunaptra. And they want his help to go find the Lost City and to explore it, not necessarily for treasure. Well, this the brother wants treasure.
We'll tell the whole movie, not a summary.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'll speed it up. They end up raising Imhotep from the dead. And because he's raised and had this horrible torture done to him, he's got these awesome badass powers over the sands. And now they have to find a way to put him back into the ground before he, as he takes Rachel and tries to use her body to raise his dead girlfriend, which why would you want to, thousands and thousands of year old girlfriend? You
have a new girlfriend. You have a motherfucker, man.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, hey, what floats your boat or sinks it? And of course, they end up besting him. They're able to unlock the golden book, take away his powers, and, you know, they send him back and escape the collapsing pyramid in the end. It's got a great score by Jerry Goldsmith. I feel like this is his best score before. I mean, he had done before he died. Before he died. So, you know, you had this score, you had Star Trek Nemesis, you had Hollow Man. I think this is like a better score than all of them. He didn't return to do the Mummy Returns, which was, you know, horribly rushed. And, you know, he had a falling out with the director, Stephen Sommers, and the studio. So he didn't return to do the Mummy. But, you know, I like this movie for what it is. It's a popcorn movie. It's not a great movie, but it's damn entertaining, and it's pretty fun to watch. Got a little bit of everything, like you said before, Mark. Got a little action,
LA Confidential scores lore.
His LA Confidential, yeah. When was LA Confidential? 98? 97? Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't too far removed either. So, probably LA Confidential is better than this one. As far
as scores go, he did the music to Rudy. I mean, the guy had done a lot of stuff. But, yeah, it's hard to – the LA Confidential score is pretty fucking good.
He captures Egypt really well with this score, I think.
Yeah. And, of course, he had been doing Star Trek themes for a while, several movies and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, well, this movie, it had been some years since I watched it. I saw this in theaters. I do remember seeing it. It was a big hit. It was popular. Having not million. Watched it in a while, yeah. though, I didn't realize how much is going on in this movie. I was like, for some reason, I remember watching it originally, and I thought it was just more of a straightforward action adventure movie. They awaken the mummy. They have to figure out how to stop him, and they do, and that's it. But like, this movie has a lot more than that. I forgot all about him killing the people that woke him so he could redo his skin, basically.
Absorb
him trying to turn the people into like these zombie-like followers of his. I don't remember any of that for some reason. And so I guess watching it this week, I'm like, man, there's a lot happens in this movie. I also forgot there's a lot of weird tone shifts in this movie where it gets really serious and dark and scary, and then all of a sudden you have Brendan Fraser make a face and go like blah, and it's supposed to be funny, you know. And I think
when he's yelling at people,
and I think that's the weirdest thing,
yelling at the moment.
And I don't want to sound like I dislike the movie, because I do think the movie's kind of fun, and it's I like as being a huge Indiana Jones films, I like this genre of film that's kind of a sword and sandals without the sword and sandals. It's more like yeah. Guns and Sandals.
The son of the son of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, and but I just didn't occur to me how just tonally shifting this movie is at times. And I still don't really like Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, I figured you'd say that. But Rachel's
nice. Oh yeah, and she's good in the movie. She's I feel like she doesn't know how to play this movie as I was watching this. Like, her acting, it's like she almost wants to laugh, but then she tries to be serious. And I mean, I really noticed a lot of little things this movie watching this week that will take you out of the film at times. Like Rachel Weisz, she really is just kind of – I don't think she knows what to do at times in this movie. And it's noticeable when you watch it if you really pay attention. Where I think that about even Brendan Fraser at times. There's like times like, okay, am I supposed to be Indiana Jones hero here and save the day, or am I supposed to be goofy? And there's a lot of scenes like that in this movie that are either really serious or really just ridiculous. And I'm just like, and it was kind of taking me out of it a little bit watching it this week. But let me say some good things about the movie. I think it's a fun story. I think Arnold Vosloo, is that how you say his name? He's really good and scary. I think for 1999 CGI, it holds up pretty well, honestly. There's a few scenes that are a little bit
better than the sequel.
Yeah. Is the sequel with the Scorpion King at the end? It looked really bad. Yeah.
Yes.
I think it holds up. I think it holds up pretty well, special effects wise. No complaints on that. I think it has some nice little jump scares in it here and there that are fun. I think it's a easily accessible movie for audiences to enjoy. So there are good things about it. I don't want to sound harsh about the watching it this week, because overall it's a nice little put together package by Mr. Budget Steven Summers, you know, if that makes sense. That's just my thoughts, initial thoughts on The Mummy.
I think it did. Part of its success was that it released in April, because if it would have released in May, it would have had to compete with Episode One, The Phantom Menace. If it would have released a month after that, it would have gone against Austin Powers.
I remember when this came out, I remember them making a big deal about them putting it out a month before Phantom Menace. Like, it originally kind of had a similar release date, and I think they moved it up. I remember that being a lot of people said that's why it did so well, because people were kind of waiting for Star Wars and like, well, we'll go see this new adventure movie and see how it is.
Yeah. I focus, you know, it's Brandon Fraser is very unconventional, and maybe he does have some identity struggles. Like, is he supposed to be the comic relief, or is he supposed to be the hero and come in guns a-blazing, you know, but I like it. I think, you know, he's very entertaining. I think he had a lot of fun with the role, and maybe that's why we got what we got.
Yeah.
You know, he does bring some comic relief to the film. That's, you know, that kind of seems to fit, even though it, you know, is kind of off-putting.
Well, a little bit.
It does seem to kind of work.
He has this kind of odd relationship with the character Benny, where they kind of, they hate each other, but yet he tries to save Benny, but yet then they crack these weird jokes at each other. It was almost like this, to stick with the Indiana Jones theme of like Indiana and Belloc, they hate each other, but they respect each other. It's almost like this is the Laurel and Hardy version of that. Like, oh, we hate each other, we respect each other, we're going to crack jokes with Brendan's character and Benny. Man, what the fuck is Brendan's character name? O'Connell.
Rick O'Connell.
I knew it was O'Connell. So I don't know. That's just how I felt about his relationship with the character of Benny. I don't know. It was weird to me.
Yeah. Some people complain that they basically stereotype a lot of the characters. But, you know, I feel like it works. I don't have a, you know, problem with it. The Americans, you know, they shooting like cowboys. The British, you know. You have Jonathan.
None of that bothers me. This movie is made in 1999. That's just the woke culture talking. You know, it's like, fuck off. You know?
And it's meant to be 1923 in the film. This is, you know, after the First World War, after the War of 1912, or, you know. And, it's, you know, I like the old school firearms in there. I like the his double revolver kind of cowboy action shooting kind of stuff.
You mentioned that
in there.
That's an earth. When I was watching this, like, the budget on this film was like, what, $85 million or something like that. And they had to spend quite, there's a lot of elaborate costumes in this, even for the extras. So, you know, that's a lot of money on costumes in this film to make it look like 1923 in that period.
Oh, yeah. And to get those set piece firearms. I mean, those couldn't have been easy to come by. Probably had to go to a friggin' museum and ask to borrow their sets. it's like, I didn't look it up. This is just me eyeing it. The weapons that the French Foreign Legion are using, they almost look like Japanese Arasakas, which is what the, you know, Japanese used in World War I. And, pretty cool looking stuff there. And their costumes, to your point, even down to the army costumes, what the soldiers wear, pretty elaborate, pretty accurate looking, probably cost a bunch. CGI, I watched it in 4K. It looked good.
I watched it on HBO Max. I don't know if it was in 4K on there. I guess I didn't notice.
No, I don't think it was. I specifically rented it in 4K. I spent the $3.99 because I have it on 4K. DVD.
I guess if they have the 4K version uploaded.
Yeah, I know it was going to be at least a HDR, but I was curious, And but man, you know, it's definitely a popcorn flick. Roger Ebert, you know, he says he compared it to a movie like Anaconda or Congo, where, you know, you're ashamed to say that you like it, but, you know, it's one of those movies that, you know, guilty pleasure for some people.
I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Anaconda or Congo, though. Congo sucked.
Yeah.
Anaconda's all right, but Congo sucked.
Yeah. Anaconda just has J-Lo in it. That's about it.
Well, and get this. They have the support of the Moroccan army for this movie. I found this interesting on IMDb. And the Universal even took out kidnapping insurance on the actors. But they didn't know it till filming was done, when Stephen Sommers told them. I guess there was an issue with kidnapping going on in Morocco at the time this was shot. So, wow. Could you imagine, like, damn. We just finished shooting a movie here. We could have been kidnapped. You motherfuckers had insurance on us.
Oh, my God.
That's funny.
Dude, that's crazy.
And
freaking. But, yeah, this I feel like this is the best film in the series. It's got the best story. Obviously, Returns, it was rushed. That was the big problem with Returns. You got bad CGI. You feel like there's just a lot of existential plot in there. All of a sudden, you know, Brendan Fraser's this warrior of God, you know, a defender of man, you know, because he's all of a sudden got this tattoo and he's from an orphanage. They just throw this stuff in there. Like, where did all this exposition come from?
It never looked that good to me.
The third one made the most in the box office. It looks the best because of the set pieces and how they film, but the acting isn't as good as this one.
It made the most.
I mean, and Rachel Weisz didn't. Yeah, and Rachel Weisz didn't even come back, but of course Jet Li's good in it. Neha Nguyen, is that the lady from Proud Crouching Tiger?
Michelle Yeoh, isn't it?
Michelle Yeoh. I was just thinking of something else, but I think this is the best film of the series. And unfortunately, Sommers, he just didn't make a good movie after this, you know, after The Mummy. I mean, he tried to do Van Helsing. That wasn't as good. You know, he tried to do The Returns. I think this was the last good movie that Sommers did.
I'm looking at his bio right now. He hasn't made anything since 2013.
Yeah. G.I. Joe was the last movie he did, right?
That came out. No, Odd Thomas Netflix movie, which wasn't very good. So, yeah. But yeah. Another thing. What about Arnold Vosloo, who came in this movie and played the mummy? And this kind of helped launch his career. I mean, he's not a household name by any means, but he's become that character actor that you see him and stuff. You're like, oh, he was in the mummy. Or speaking of G.I. Joe, he was Zartan in G.I. Joe. So this did help Arnold Vosloo launch his career as playing villains and stuff like that. But hey, he genuinely, I think out of everyone in the movie, I think he understood what movie he was in. He's supposed to be the scary evil dude, the mummy. And every scene he's in, he's quite frightening looking. And a lot of the actors did not meet Arnold yet as they were filming CGI parts. So they would post pictures of Arnold in front of them so they could act to it and stuff and know that he was kind of a scary looking dude. So, you know, he understood he was supposed to be kind of in a horror fantasy film. And unlike Rachel Weisz, didn't believe it was a horror film. She thought it was a comic book movie, which might explain why she was a little all over the place in this. And then there's Brendan Fraser doing whatever, I guess he's figuring out to do in each scene that the director tells him to do. And that's my initial thoughts on The Mummy. It's a fun movie. Definitely a guilty pleasure. I can see that. I remember the sequel being horrible. I don't think I ever saw the third one, as I just mentioned. But the first one is definitely the best movie in the series. I would give it that. Not a great film, but not a bad film either. You know, it's kind of if I was to rank this, I'd say it's a pretty solid B. You know, just a fun adventure movie. That might even be a little kind to it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a B minus, but I don't think I can go harder than that with it, you know. Because
I think it's a B.
It's a fun. It's a cool story. I like stories like this, and you know, it's better. It's better than the Tom Cruise movie that came out a couple years ago.
For real,
and I mean, maybe not special effect wise.
The best modern,
maybe not special effect wise, but Unfortunately, the Tom Cruise Mummy movie didn't have an editor worth the shit, so the movie doesn't make any sense. So,
yeah.
And it's a shame. As I've said before, man, in the past on the show, you know, Universal Monsters is such a ripe franchise that could have some cool stuff to be done with. And but Universal hasn't figured out how to launch it properly. You know, they had this Mummy movie back in the day, and then they did the Jack Nicholson Wolf movie, and some of those came out back in the but not a universe. And they were trying to launch it with the Tom Cruise one, didn't work. And now it seems they're using their subsidiary A24, I think it is, or one of those companies, or Blumhouse. You know, they had the Invisible Man come out, and it looks like they're going to do more. So maybe one day we'll get more Universal Monster movies like these. We'll see.
Maybe one day.
Yeah, maybe one day. All right. Well, with no Long on the show today, there's no Duel of the Nerds. Once again, it'll be next week. We introduced this new segment, and it seems like now we've put the new segment on hold, but it will be back next week.
Yes.
But there's been a lot of news this week. A week ago tomorrow, was Super Bowl Sunday, or I guess it would already been a week by the time I'll hear this, since I released it on Monday mornings. And so we got a trailer, some movie trailers in front of the Super Bowl. But I think the biggest thing that people took away from was this crazy ass Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness trailer that hit. The television version was only like 60 seconds, but the full trailer hit online shortly after. And it has fan theories going wild to the point where I'm like, I'm just going to wait and see what the movie is, because if you read things online, you'll think, good God, every Marvel hero in the fucking world is in this film, you know, just from the trailer. Yeah. And,
well, Patrick Stewart's voice is in it.
Yes, Patrick Stewart's voice is in it, but that's obvious. Everything else, it's like
Patrick Stewart. You know,
maybe it's Captain Marvel. I really don't think it's Superior Iron Man. I don't see why they would go that route right now and where they are at in the films. I think people are trying to jump these comic book wishes they have. But we'll see. I thought it was a cool trailer. I mean, I'm already sold in this film because we got to – I mean, hell, you watch Spider-Man Far From Home or No Way Home. It should have you prep for this movie. And, you know, and I was never – I wasn't that excited about a Doctor Strange sequel until all everything that happened in No Way Home happened. Now it's like, okay, I got to see this shit and see what's up, you know. Because I do enjoy the first Doctor Strange film, but I wasn't like dying for a sequel for it or something, you know. So we'll see. What do you think? Any thoughts on Doctor Strange trailer?
I'm with you. You know, it's the best trailer. You know, don't jump to conclusions. I have heard some fun rumors or some theories. And the one I like the best right now is that maybe Xavier is, you know, we're obviously going to get Xavier. If you have Patrick Stewart, you got to have Xavier. But maybe he's suppressing everybody's memories about mutants, and that's why no one remembers him.
Well, that,
but it is a multiverse movie.
That, and I hope that is the Illuminati in the movie, because I think I have a copy of Avengers. I have a copy of New Avengers number 7 sitting up there in a box that let that motherfucker keep shooting up in price, because it's already jumped from being a $5 back end book to about $40 in a week. So, you know, wow. I'm pretty sure I have it up in a box up there. We also got our first look at the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power. And, you know, I'm not a diehard Tolkien by any means. I don't give a shit whether they're making stuff up from Tolkien's writings and the Tolkien fans are shitting themselves over it. Fuck that shit. I don't care. To me, it looks awesome. I was sold. I think that was a cool ass trailer. September 2nd. I'm not ready for it to get here fast, because that would be after my birthday and I'll be a year older, but we don't want to talk about that. But I am definitely looking forward to seeing this show. I think it looks fantastic.
I think so too.
Yeah. And so bring it on. Another trailer that hit this week I thought would look cool was, man, did you see the Chippendale Rescue Rangers trailer for the movie? Man, that looks like a hell of a lot of fun, man. Excited. I watched that show a lot when I was a kid too. And maybe a little bit bigger kid than you, but, that trailer, yeah, I haven't really, you know, let's be honest. Some of these Disney Plus movies have not been that good. We know this. They're kind of like Netflix movies. It's like studios aren't quite ready to spend that extra money on their streaming movies. Have you noticed that with these streaming films? Unless they're streaming films that Netflix bought to air, like Don't Look Back, you know, they bought that. That wasn't a Netflix film. It's something they purchased. they're still their budgets at times still feel like made for TV movies, even on Disney Plus. But the Chip and Dale trailer, their special effects look pretty good. So I'm hoping that it's a fun movie on Disney Plus to hit here in a couple months. Paramount Plus had their shareholder day last week, and they announced a whole bunch of Tyler Sheridan TV shows. The guy does Yellowstone since he's very popular. But they also snuck in some other news. They're working on new animated projects for the Transformers and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to air on Paramount Plus. And word is that it's going to be a Generation One style Transformers and kind of a throwback Ninja Turtles show. So hopefully that's pretty cool. But the big news that came out of it was J.J. Abrams has come back on board as producer for the Star Trek films, and they have hired a director, and they are going to go full on to bring back the cast to do a Star Trek 4 from the Kelvin timeline. And it seems, if you believe the rumors online, it seems Chris Pine is still the holdout, but it seems like Paramount is ready to throw money and let's get this thing made, which should have been done 3 or 4 years ago when Chris Pine first asked for money. Because, you know, obviously in the last few years, we've seen several rumors of different directors going to reboot Star Trek and this and that and a whole nother film. And obviously none of them got off the ground because the fans want the Kelvin timeline back and they want that crew. Paramount, you know, I guess they made some money from Yellowstone, some of their other successes lately, Paw Patrol merchandise, who fucking knows. But it seems like they finally came around to it and said, you know what, let's go pay these motherfuckers and make this thing happen. So it looks like Star Trek 4 is going to occur. And maybe J.J. Abrams had a little bit to do with that too. Maybe he sat down with them in a room and said, look, guys, you have to do it. Let's spend the money. Let's get Chris over here and make this movie. So we'll see. Mm-hmm.
Throw him something.
I mean, he's worth it, right? I mean, he's a star now. You bring back the crew here a few years after the last Star Trek, and you make a really good story. I think you'll sell people and they'll go back. I was really hoping that Abrams was going to announce he was going to direct it, but I guess he's not ready to do that. Finally, after almost 3 years, we have a release date for Stranger Things Season 4. And it's sooner than you think. It's May 27th. They will hit that Friday, which is strangely around the time we'll be doing our 300th episode. And it's going to be a two-part season. Part two, I think, hits right around after July 4th. If I remember right. They're saying every episode is going to be longer than last year's episodes, which means an hour and 15 minutes. But, you know, this is a show that took everyone by storm and most people really enjoy. I think we all really enjoy it. But it feels like a really long wait for this new season.
Oh, yeah, man. And I can't wait. I've been waiting for Stranger Things and, you know, want to see what's in store. And they did announce it's going to end in season 5. Yes,
that was the other part of the
news. Season 5 will be the last one.
Which is okay. You don't want this to go on too far. You know, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Amazon was making a Fallout TV series. And they're bringing in the great character actor Walter Coggins to be the lead in this. And I started thinking about this. And, man, Walter Coggins is pretty perfect for a post-apocalypse type setting. I actually think he'll be pretty good in this.
For real.
So Fallout fans, you have that to look forward to as video games continue to get bought up and made into either shitty movies and hopefully not shitty TV shows. I'm going to give Halo a chance. I am. I pay for Paramount Plus, so I'll give Halo a chance when it hits 6 months. John Williams is returning to the Star Wars universe. He's going to compose the theme for the Obi-Wan show. He's not scoring the whole show, just the new theme song for Obi-Wan. And this is cool because it might be our last – I mean, let's be honest. It might be our last piece of Star Wars music we ever get from John Williams. The man is 90 years old.
Yep.
So everything we get from him is an absolute gift. So I think that's cool. I think that's cool they brought.
Absolutely.
And the last bit of news I have, you know, everyone knows that the great artist George Perez is battling terminal cancer, and he has chosen, you know, not to undergo treatment, that he's going to go about his way sometime this year. And so Marvel and DC, who have long have a history on the publishing side of things, are not always getting along and being cutthroat competitive since the early days of comic books. They, the Justice League America Avengers crossover that was drawn by George Perez has never been reprinted. So they put together their differences and they're going to make 7,000 copies available to comic book stores here in the next week or two. So if you want to reprint a Justice League Avengers crossover, you can get it in your comic book stores here in the next week or two, honoring the great George Perez, as you know, he's given a lot to the comic book world, and we wish him the best in his battle with cancer here in the year 2022. Got to meet George at Comic-Palooza a few years ago. Super nice guy. My only regret is, why did I not get a sketch from him? I should have, but you know, you just don't know what's going to happen at that time. But George Perez is very active on his Facebook. Keep him, if he's not, his wife updates it for him to let people know how he's doing and everything as he battles this thing to the end, you know. And that's what he does. But so anyway, we started the show kind of a sad note, ended the show on a sad note, not on purpose. But let's preview next week's film. Man, it's been, we have not done a Bruce Lee film since, man, second or third episode of the reboot, when we did Enter the Dragon. So it's time to revisit a Bruce Lee movie, one of his other very popular movies, and that is Fist of Fury.
There have been superheroes, supervillains, and super movies, but there has never been anything like karate and kung fu. And Bruce Lee, he's the man with the fists of fury. Karate and Kung Fu, the new screen excitement you've been waiting for. Introducing the incredible heroics of Bruce Lee. Every limb of his body is a lethal weapon against an army of men, the most sensual of women, and the most savage of beasts. Karate and Kung Fu. The explosive combination that gives you the biggest kick of your life. Fists of Fury.
I don't know if this is the first time watch for me or not. I may have seen it. It's one of those movies I might have seen as a kid and don't recall the title. So I'm kind of looking forward to watching it. It is on Amazon Prime, for those people that want to watch along with us. So don't go renting it, Matt. You can watch on Amazon Prime. I think it might even be on HBO Max too. I think it's on a couple of streaming services. But I'm looking forward to this one, man. Something different, change of pace for some of the movies we've done lately to talk Bruce Lee and Fist of Fury on next week's episode. And hopefully Long is back with us next week. And we wish him well and his family, and hopefully he returns to the show next week. And again, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. Continue to stay safe out there, and thank you as always for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, until next time, just go there and do it.
And do it.